accession number 2008, reel 10.
Dennis Wybow, reel 10. I believe you were called up for the Korean War.
Yes, it's 1950, what I remember. It was August, they more or less had a shutdown week in those days. You had a week off and you didn't get paid, you know. They shut down week for your holidays. And when I come back off the holidays, I got the a registered envelope and I knew what it was right away. And that was calling me back for the career. Well, it was a bit traumatic. I was just beginning to get on my feet, you know, and things were going well. And of course, a bit of a knockdown to get called back. But in my mind, I thought, well, I'll probably go back on some duty or other and let the regular soldiers go off, you know, or something like that, you know. But, well, I went down to Tidworth, that's where I got report. I went in Andover and they picked us up at the station. There was a load more blokes come down on the same train and we went into the Oval, by the Oval of the barracks there, and they indoctrinated us in and we spent the night there, and next morning they had a parade for the MO, and they as we went in they give two inoculations in one arm and an inoculation and a vaccination in the other before you got your medical. So they knew we was going. Of course, we went before all these doctors, like, and we had every complaint you could think of, more or less, what you could think of, really. But it didn't make any difference anyway, we passed. And went on from there, and they give us a kit, and we went into the huts, and we went on parade, and they more or less told us we were going to Korea, so that was it. So then they we had morning parades and that, and we was detailed off to go to gunnery classes and wireless classes and all that, because I was a driver up. I went on the gunnery as well, and surprisingly, I found the people what were instructing us didn't know as much about it as what we did. Although we hadn't had the 20 pounders, but we'd had the Beezer machine guns and all that, and the Brens and that, which we was equipped with more or less all the gear we knew what to use, and the 19 sets. When I was in the last war, I had two in the tank because I was rear link and a squadron, you see. I was in the second in command stack, and they said we no longer use Morse code. I thought that was funny. We had to use with the 19 sets even in Belgium, France, and that over long distances, we had to use Morse code at night because the interference was so great, you know.
What type of tanks were you training on?
We were just doing the gunnery and wireless thing, and then I suppose we'd been there about a week doing all this training, you know, and that. And the Sergeant Major was trying to assert his authority, and of course reservists are a bit bulgy. the RSM down at the guard room there was chucking them out, and the Sergeant Majors were putting them in. Anyway, that eventually sorted out after about a week or so, and then we was all shipped up to Thetford from Tidworth. We was up to Thetford, and they took out some Second World War comets, crumbles rather, and of course all the Ulster Rifles, Northumberland Fusiliers are there, and we done, you know, a live fire attack, you know, and with all the thing I've seen it before, I mean, we done it in the Second World War, but they done all this live firing and troops advancing. That was finished up on Frog Hill, what I always did do, because that was mainly the position where they could bring 25-pounders and that to fire. And then we done that. I suppose we was up there 3 or 4 days or more, might be a week, I don't know. We had to draw all this stuff out of these aircraft hangars you know, equip the tank out and take it out and do it, and then we all had to hand it back. I suppose that 5 or 6 days was there. So time was getting on. When we went back, of course, they had these, kept having these parades, you know. trying to knock us. I think the Sergeant Major was doing a nut with some of them, but eventually that all kind of worked out, and then the Centurions started coming from the ordnance factory with the civilian blokes handing them over. So I had to go out and with them to try it out, and round Salisbury Plain there's a big hill there, and we went out and we tried out the automatic what was it now, where the gun remains on the target when you was on the move. And
oh, is it stabilisation?
Yeah, stabilisation, yeah, stabiliser, yeah. We'd never had that before. And anyway, we went out and tested this out and thoroughly put it up a hill and stood it on us behind and went up it, where you wouldn't take another tank. And that went straight up, you know, in low gear, right up over the top. And that, I was really amazed that to do it. And
was that the main difference between the Centurion and the Churchills you'd used in the Second World War?
Oh yeah, there was no comparison with whatever tanks we'd had in the Second World War, the Cromwells, the Centaurs, what were the other, Covenanters and all that. We'd been all through them, because being in 9th Armoured Division was experimental really, so we went right up through, right to the Cromwells. And then they dispersed the division, and we was finished up with crocodiles, you know, infantry tanks. And anyway, Centurion, when we got back, I was amazed at that. Now, the only thing what went through my mind was, why didn't we have that in 1944? If we'd have had our regiment of them in 1944, I reckon they'd been hate. The gun, it was marvellous, you know. The whole thing was totally different to what we'd been used to. Yet, it was familiar. The tanks are familiar, really. And I don't know when this would be. I suppose this would be... September time, getting on for the end of September, when we'd already got these, we signed for the tank and all the gear, you know, the usual paraphernalia. And then they start to send the blokes on 14 days embarkation leave. Well, I got the job of escorting the tanks down to Barry Docks in Wales. I think there was eight, two troops of tanks went down. And, of course, that was, in those days, it was only these Camels and these low-loader trailers behind them that what could take them when they really weren't man enough to take a Centurion. Well, it took us still 3 days to get to Barry because there's no Severn Bridge. We had to go all the way up through Bristol and up through Abergavenny and then come right back down again to Barry Docks near Cardiff. Well, we got there and there was kind of a transit hut there we was in on the docks, and they got this big Liberty boat there, American Liberty boat, and they were loading all this up, and anyway, and our job was more or less get the tank up the side of the ship, and then they'd do the rest. But what actually happened, the first tank we got up beside the ship, the ship's jumbo had never been used. It had never been used since the ship had been made, because it was all in a port and they used the port crane. But the War Office made a stipulation that the ship's jumbo had got to lift these tanks on and be able to lift them off the other side. So they got this, because it was all steam thingy, you know, what ones of the crew were using it, but they got this tank all clipped up, you know, with the shackles on, four corners up at the top, shackled up, and they lifted it up, well, you know, the height of a boat's deck. They got it up the height of a boat's deck, or just a little above, and the horses go away, and the first Centurion come down, crashed down on the... Of course, there's all steam pipes going up to the cranes, because they were all steam, and of course that burst all them, and absolutely flew. The Centurion was more or less got to go back to the factory because the turret had all that was the first one we got. So then everything had a halt for about 2 days, and then the Lloyd's Insurance come down, and they'd had the riggers on, re-rigging it all out with new wire, and they got a big clock, what I saw, a clock, you know, and I was testing the lift and weight of the jumbo, and they put it to a shackle in the deck and tried it up. I don't know what they tried it up to, because I wasn't near it, I wasn't going anywhere near where wire ropes were broken. Anyway, then we got the next tank up. This was a week after, before we started loading these tanks. We'd been down there a week, and I knew that time was running out because we got to go on leave to catch a boat. They lifted the second one up and put the clock in between that and the tank and weighed the tank to see who's going to pay for the damage. It's just Lloyd's shipping people. Anyway, they took the clock out, and we loaded, we drove the tanks up, and the dockers had been waiting to load these on. They get tonnage money in today's days. So we drove the tanks up, 50 ton a time, lifted them up, went down in the hold and drove them into position. And the stevedores were jacking them up with these 100-ton jacks, you know, and blocking them right up. And then we loaded them all up in a short time. And the old dockers, of course, we've been chatting to them all the while because they ain't working. They weren't working. They were waiting for the thing there. The old doctor said, we've made more money and them blokes what I've been working all the week loading the ammunition in the middle holes. Of course, they saw us well. We went down to the club or pub what they used, and We didn't buy any drink. We had it, they done us well. Anyway, we got back to Tidworth after loading, and immediately I was sent on leave. So 14 days. So I went home on leave, you know, and it's a gallywood here. And of course I had two allotments and I had a big garden up the top there. So in me 14 days, I dug it all up ready so the wife would only have to plant it in the spring. I dug everything in. And it was a beautiful October, that October. It was wonderful because we took the kids out over the common there, and that's a wonderful bit of ground, and the sun was shining in October, and we had quite a happy time there with the kids playing in the heather and that. In those days, that was quite wonderful. That was, of course, only too soon. I had to go back. I went back. I wasn't very happy about going at all, really. But I suppose I had to. And when I got back, I spent a night there, and the next morning, I think we was paraded, put on the train to Southampton. So that shows you how tight it was. If I hadn't have gone back, I'd have probably been able to have done a bunk and missed it. But anyway, we got down to Southampton, and we were there by the docks where the Queen Mary come in, really, and the Empire Ferry was there. Of course, we went on, and we got our sea kit bags and all the kit and whatnot on. And the old ship played us out to Auld Lang Syne, and we was on our way.
What were the conditions like on board?
Pardon?
What were the conditions like on board?
It was very good. I mean, I've been used to wartime conditions. LSTs, I mean, you could be up the ankles in water in them. I mean, LSTs, when we went on LSTs, that was, we used to have to drive on and shackle the tanks up, and if the weather got really bad, we was down there tightening up the shackles, and as they moved one way, and, you know, that was a bit of an artful dodge, you know. And the heads and all that used to be an ankle deep in water in them. Empire Ferry was a German strength through joy liner for the Baltic. She was, I suppose, taken as reparations. We got going anyway. Went down to Bar Biscuit. That was quite calm, a calm trip through the Mediterranean up to Port Said. We stopped in Port Said, but we weren't allowed to go ashore. I suppose it's about a week. It must be a week. Then we got through the canal to Port Tufik, is that the other side? They let us ashore there and marched us through the sand to a tented army base or something there, where we had a cup of tea and something ashore, and then walked us back. They only done it for the exercise on it. Then we went from there to Aden, where they had to take on water. They didn't allow us ashore there because for some reason they were in a hurry. More or less, while we was on the boat, they were doing all these exercises cadres, like different cadres of different things. And these young officers were telling us what was going to happen when we got to the other side. Oh dear. I mean, we used to talk there. I mean, there were only young left then that say they'd never been in the war. And they used to say this and that, and we used to say, oh, no, no, that won't happen. You don't know half of it. They'd all got military minds that everything in the army went according to plan, you know. This is their layout. Little did they know how many things didn't go according to plan. They never did go according to plan. It took us a week to get across the Indian Ocean. We never stopped at Bombay or anywhere or Colombo, which was normally they would stop. See, it took us over a week to get over the Indian Ocean and down through to Singapore. And when we got to Singapore, the boat was so light, they had to take the water boats out before they could get her in the port. She got no steerage way at her slow speed because there was the troops had used up more or less all the water. So they had two or three water boats out there and filled her up. I mean, that was the ballast of the thing, I suppose. We got her in and got to Singapore, and that was the first real landing we'd had. They let us off for a day. Of course, we made straight for the Raffles Club, and I don't know. We met up with some New Zealand sailors. They'd just come back from a exercise in the Mediterranean on a submarine. Of course, what we'd done, there was about four or five of us and four or five of them. So, yeah, what we'd done, we emptied our pockets on the table and sat there and had a good drink, you know, had a good time. And the bloke said, well, what are we going to do when we get back? We've got to get back. I said, well, if they don't send nobody to fetch us, I'm staying here. That was a beer talking. But anyway, they did send a lorry up, and then the old sergeant major was there checking us aboard. Oh dear, poor old Jimmy. Then the next stop we had, we come along, there was a typhoon in the China Sea, just as we was approaching. So they more or less hove to in the lee of Okinawa, just short of Japan. And the surprising thing was you could see the water spouts where they was whipping them up, and they were whistling by the sea. I'd never seen anything like it. That was something I'd never seen before. And of course, we made a way to... This was November time then, I suppose. Must have been. I can't remember the dates. We made a way from there to Pusan. And we docked in Pusan. You never see the antics. The old there's an American Negro band in there. And they played us a welcome to ground, or whatever it was. But you never see the antics overcutting. They were taking three steps forward, backwards, and playing all this jazz out. It was quite good, you know. And I happened to be talking to a chap next to us on the rails while we was there. And he'd been a prisoner of war of the Japanese, and they called him up and took him out to Korea. And he was an intelligent bloke. He was a schoolmaster in private life, and they called him up, and he got no time for it. You see, the Koreans, you see, were the worst of the Japanese people looking after prayer. Well, that's what he said anyway. What I can remember.